May I speak in the name of God, the lover, the beloved, and the love sharer. Amen. So, previously in Matthew, Jesus has been journeying around the Galilean countryside. He's been healing. He's been preaching and teaching and miracle working, and he's been getting into hot debate. He goes to the border region. The Middle East in Jesus' day was no different than it is today. Set your feet too far in one direction and you're in someone else's territory. And Jesus finds himself on the border where he's accosted by a woman who will not take no for an answer. And out of this encounter, which has moments of confrontation in it, Jesus seems to experience an aha moment. He seems to understand for the first time, maybe, that God's mission for him is not just to the lost sheep of the house of Israel, but to the whole world. And Matthew constructs a story around these events in Jesus' ministry. And he constructs it in a very particular way because Matthew wants us to understand a sequence of events. You remember that one of the things that Jesus does while he was preaching and teaching and wandering about the countryside was he fed the 5,000. And there were 12 baskets gathered up afterwards. Now, Matthew and his readers would understand that 5,000 and 12 are Jewish numbers. So what Matthew wants us to understand by the feeding of the 5,000 is that this is a Jewish feast. Then Jesus goes to the borderland, and he has this moment of realization. And he comes back, and Matthew records him again, feeding, this time 4,000. Now, this is not a repeat of the earlier incident, because 4 and 7, there were 7 baskets of food gathered up, are Gentile numbers. And so Matthew wants us to understand that the 4,000 feeding is a Gentile feast and reflects this movement in Jesus' self-understanding from just being for Israel to being for the Gentile world. And it's interesting to note that it's on the borderland that Jesus has this experience. And I want us to note that because when we too step outside the boundaries of the familiar, when we move beyond only that which we can imagine, that's the moment, that's the place where somehow we encounter new understanding. And at this point in Matthew's gospel, Jesus now turns towards Jerusalem and he begins the long journey on the road to Jerusalem. And this is an image for us because we are, over the next months, accompanying Jesus on that road to Jerusalem. As we journey with Jesus, this is the road along which we discover what it means to be disciples. And it brings us to the episode for today in Matthew's story. You remember that last week I quoted from someone called Matthew Skinner, and it bears repeating what Matthew Skinner says. He says that as we journey soon into the new beginnings of post-Labor Day autumn, what will it mean to deny ourselves, take up our cross, and follow Jesus? More certainly than giving up a few things, more than suffering as part of the human condition, more than moving forward on new paths, peering into autumn's transitions, we belong to one another. And in today's gospel, Jesus addresses the issue. Well, it's really Matthew addressing the issues of discipline in his church, but he's drawing on the community's memory of Jesus talking to the disciples about how they are to behave towards one another, particularly in the face of conflicts that arise over difference. If Matthew Skinner's assertion that we belong to one another is to have any meaning, then we have to understand Jesus' teaching on our responsibility for one another and our individual accountability for one another, especially in the face of issues that arise between us of difference. And in a culture where Episcopalians have come to treat membership of the church as just another version of their membership of any other voluntary non-profit organization, the idea that we are responsible for and accountable to one another rings alarm bells. We mutter to ourselves, "No one's going to tell me what to do. And if I don't like it, then I'll just leave." This has become the solution of choice when faced with the inevitability of conflict and tension in our community. And I love another commentator's words about this morning's gospel, Rick Morley, and he, in a blog entitled, "Before You Unfriend," has this to say. If another member of the church sins against you, just talk about them behind their back. If another member of the church sins against you, just call a bunch of people in the church and complain about them. You may even want to start a letter-writing campaign against them. And if another member of the church sins against you, just send them a nasty email. Copy it to the clergy, and while you're at it, copy it to the bishop. If another member of the church sins against you, don't say anything. Just avoid them. Unfriend them on Facebook. And if you can't avoid them on Sundays, then just leave the church. And Matthew, this passage from Matthew has become so ingrained in our collective consciousness as a people because it's the epitome for us of the oppressive way religious communities treat. These verses have been used to justify the abuse in religious communities of shunning, which is invariably a form of officially sanctioned scapegoating. Now, in the Episcopal Church, we don't need to worry about being shunned, because most of us don't give that level of priority to our church membership for it to even matter if we were. That we might be accountable to one another makes us shudder. This is our collective unconscious fear. A fear from a time when inclusion and exclusion in Christian community meant life or death. Our collective dread is further compounded in our individual experience because ostracism is one of the most painfully reoccurring personal experiences of growing up. So what does it mean if we are to belong to one another, if we are to be accountable for and to one another? I want to reframe, which means just to slightly change the boundaries within which we think about this passage from Matthew. And I want to reframe it by substituting the word for in place of the word to. So we are accountable to one another becomes we are accountable for one another. And I believe that this is probably closer to what Jesus intends for his small, beleaguered band of followers. They will not survive unless they know how to be accountable for one another. In other words, how to look out for one another. Sometimes looking out for one another makes it necessarily to challenge one another. Sometimes looking out for one another requires us to challenge a particular individual whose behavior is not only threatening the personal relationships that they and we enjoy together, but perhaps maybe threatening to disrupt the stability of the whole community. And so looking out for one another is not just nurturing and caring, but it's nurturing and caring often times in the face of tension and conflict. David Luce, in his commentary on this passage from Matthew, says, "So what kind of community do we want our congregation to be? Largely social, somewhat superficial, which is of course safe. Do we want something more meaningful or intimate, which is riskier and harder? Do we want a place that can both encourage us and hold us accountable? Are we looking for a place we can be honest about our hopes and fears, our dreams and our anxieties? And do we want somewhere we can just blend in? Or are we looking for a place we can really make a difference?" And as you can see by the presence of the choir and the increase in the numbers sitting in the pews and the ministry fair that we will have in the Great Hall following this Eucharist, as you can see, today is Homecoming Sunday. Welcome back, many of you. Homecoming has a kind of literal quality to it because in Rhode Island, the custom of many is to make good use of the summer weekends for trips to the sea and to the forests and the mountains and other wonderful places. Because as all Yankees know, winter is coming. So this is an appropriate time to pose these questions about what kind of community do we want to become? And as we journey together into the mists and mellow fruitfulness of fall, what kind of community are we on the way to becoming? Now, my vision for this community is that we are always in a process of becoming, where relationship rests on mature capacity to negotiate tension, to negotiate conflict face to face. For me, conflict is inevitable in any healthy Christian community. And by healthy, I mean a community where people engage with their passion in the task of worshiping together, loving one another, and serving the world. Where passions are engaged, strong feelings are always in play. But I, for one, am not afraid of strong feelings. What I'm afraid of are lukewarm feelings. Where conflict and tension is avoided because ultimately nothing is important enough to fall out over. And where the personal cost of leaving the community is so inconsequential because if we don't like St. Martin's, there's always somewhere else to go. Although the evidence shows that when Episcopalians leave one church, they stop going to any church. This morning's gospel ends with Jesus talking about where two or three agree. To gather in my name, I will be there. So how does that relate to what I've just been saying about the recognition of difference and the facing of conflict? Does this mean that we have to agree with one another before we can gather in his name? Does agreement envisage the eradication of difference? Because most Christian traditions stress theological agreement, does gather together mean the fruit of theological agreement about what's true and about what's not true? Now, my answer to each of these questions is a resounding no. This is not what it means to agree together to gather. Shared agreement is not available to us in our episcopal tradition. We can be likened to the Jews of the Christian world, because the only thing we can agree on is that we don't agree on much. And what this actually means is not that anything goes, far from it, but that we are a communion. This is a word that signifies relationship rather than structure. We recognize that the world can be viewed through several different lenses. We acknowledge that there are, broadly speaking, several worldviews possible. We see no reason to pretend that these differences of worldview will not be reflected in the makeup of our communities. Because it's not shared truth, but common worship that ties us together. It's within a communion of relationships that we become accountable for one another. This is the vision that I hope that we are now beginning to travel the road towards. Because in this way, I believe that we are able to echo Matthew Skinner's words, peering into autumn's transitions, we find that we belong to one another. Amen.